What's up, y'all? It's 10-3 time in Tennessee. How are you? I hope you're doing well here on this Tuesday, February the 17th, 2026. Couple of big birthday shout-outs off the top here to two of the greatest basketball players of all time, Michael Jordan and my dad.
Well, happy birthday.
My dad's not one of the best basketball players of all time. I mean, I just always like making that joke, Tom Barclay, because it is so very fun for me to make that joke.
Sure.
It's just so very fun. I'm always, hey, Dad, could you and MJ one-on-one, who's going to take that? Who's going to take that? I'm like, well, I mean, if it's who can build a house faster, that would be my dad. If it's probably just about anything else, I'm going to go with MJ. That's sure. Just I'm just throwing that out there. Love you, Dad, but especially in your age now. And honestly, he's got more Daytona 500 championships than you too now, old man. He's got one. You got none.
One-upped in so many different ways, I guess.
But this is a great transition. My dad, one of the biggest Dale Earnhardt fans on the face of the planet.
Who isn't?
Well, see, my dad was like OG, though, like from 70s, 80s. Like a lot of the garage at the house is like Dale Earnhardt like stuff, like old merch, posters,
number
things like
threes
that.
All over the place, the yes. Intimidator, all
yes.
That good
yes.
Stuff.
Yes, and but here's the thing. This is what's crazy.
Yeah.
My dad, when I was a kid, I was a much bigger NASCAR fan, like as a young kid. I got older, I got into other sports, and now I keep an eye on it, but I don't even understand some of the rules now. So it's I don't like where the numbers are on the cars.
I feel like it's a different sport altogether these days. They put so many restrictions on the racing in general, and it doesn't have that same feel it did back in the 90s and 80s.
And what happened, what happens for me is you get older, you get married, you start having kids, you're working a lot. Just the number of things that you are able to keep track of or that really be invested in, like really emotionally invested in, it shrinks. And so I still will, like, if there's a good race on, I'm always going to watch it. But I'm not, like, a huge fan anymore. But I've been to, I think, probably 15 or so NASCAR tracks throughout, so maybe around a dozen, 15 from my youth up to – you know, I guess most recently would have been to a few about 10 years ago.
Ever been to Darlington?
Yes, have. Oh, yes.
That's great. That's near where I was born.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Yes. It's a
that's our claim to fame. That's our claim to fame.
The Darlington Stripe, baby.
The tire destroyer.
Oh, yes. But we had been to so many races, but my dad and I had never gone to the Daytona 500. Okay. You know Dale Earnhardt's history with the Daytona 500. Not great, right? Mm-hmm. So many years, didn't win the thing, almost came close, almost won. Then, of course, but still, so many years before that,
sure,
just heartbreak after heartbreak. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the biggest reasons my dad never gone to the 500. He's like, I'm never going to go because I'm going to see one of those in person. I'm going to hate it. And one year, Tom, mm-hmm. He decided, you know what? He's like, I don't want to say I never went to this race. So he and I went, and it was the year Dale Earnhardt won the Daytona 500. It was the year that it happened, and we were
really
sitting
is.
At the start-finish line. Because, and that's not always like the best view at some of these races, but it was like, my dad was like, if this happens, by God, I'm going to be at the finish line. I'm going to be there when it happens.
Mm-hmm.
And we were right there, and I was 16 years old. And I was there when my younger brother was born. I've been there on both the day I got married and the day my brother got married. I've been there on the day that my dad became a grandfather for the first time. I have never seen him happier than that day. Never. And it will be something that if I have like five memories in my life, if I only get to keep, if someone at the very end says, you know what, you get five memories. I am absolutely reserving a place for that one. So that means there can only be X number of kids that my wife and I have, because those always. I mean, those
you can't go over four
no,
kids.
Those have to be in there, and then the wedding day.
Yeah, about to say, you're losing the wedding day in that case.
So really, that means a maximum of what, two, three kids. So we better stop. But that one absolutely reserves a spot on the list. So I tied those things to two things together. Happy birthday to Daytona 500 champion Michael Jordan, and happy birthday to Daytona 500 champion my dad. Happy birthday, Dad. Love you. My number one hero, my hero for life. We got a lot to talk about on this show today. It has been another busy day. And Tuesdays are always a little hectic because y'all have heard me say this on several Tuesdays. We have our sports meeting at 2:30 every week on these Tuesdays. And so they end 30 seconds before this show starts, basically. And now I help Robin with her show at 2. And so it's just a big kind of a car wash. It's kind of like a brain goes into a fudge-like state, basically, for this time. So, again, something could have happened in the past half an hour. I don't think it did. But we are still waiting on news for Joey Aguilar to see if that comes down the pike. I know that's number one on a lot of people's lists. But as of now, we do not have information there. Interestingly, though, did hear – I said yesterday that I thought – I still thought better chance, slightly better chance that he gets it than he doesn't, but not nearly as optimistic as I was before the hearing started. You don't want to be kind of a slave to the moment, right? You don't want to be kind of a recency bias thing. But once you watch that hearing, you think, you know, this judge is pretty close on this. I can tell you can't, unless he's just being very thorough, which you should be always. But he was not tipping his hand there very often. He was not showing a whole lot there. And so he was leaving quite a bit to the imagination on what he was thinking. And so I still thought, and maybe still kind of do, that there's a slightly better chance he gets it than doesn't. But then yesterday, you see that Chris Lowe, who's been one of the best reporters in all of college football for, you know, 30 years now, but certainly a guy who still lives in Knoxville, a guy who's covered Tennessee for a lot of that career, and a guy who I joke all the time that when I was a 17-year-old in this business, CeeLo would kick my tail, and now occasionally, I'm 25 years later, he still occasionally kicks me right in the tail. He is one of the best. He's a GOAT, in my opinion. And he said yesterday on a radio station in Nashville, I believe 104.5 The Zone, I think, is where he said this, that he is starting to think that there's a chance he doesn't get it. And he might slightly be leaning that way even. And so, again, like, CeeLo's got great sources. It's not like he's sitting there. I don't think he's sitting there talking to the judge. Of course, he's CeeLo, so he might be. But I don't think he is. And so, but he's obviously got connections, like a bunch of us who have covered Tennessee for a long time have connections. And the people that I've spoken to are on the fence, sort of, thinking about this. Some a little more optimistic than others. Some pretty concerned. It's a nice wide cross-section of opinion there. But some of the people he's spoken with, according to him, starting to think that there's a chance it doesn't happen. So now that could, I think he said that around 23, 24 hours ago. So there's no, that could change. And we won't know until that ruling comes down. But again, I've said from the beginning on this, I think the two biggest things there are what's fair to Joey Aguilar and what's fair to future 18 to 21 year olds wanting to play college football are two different things. And what's best for the game and what's technically through a very narrow sort of understanding of Sherman antitrust law is actually legally correct for Joey Aguilar. That's something else. And that's why this is so complicated. It's so complex. I mean, ultimately, it's a gladiator, and you get the thumbs up, the thumbs down, and there's no, you know, there's no shade of gray there, right? So you have to take, and this is one of the many reasons I imagine why being a judge or being a jurist is so difficult, is because there are times where you ultimately have to take something that is a gigantic shade of gray, varying shades of gray, and make it black or white. That's what you have to do. Legally speaking, you have to go yay or nay. And I'm glad, because if I'm a juror, I don't even know if I could be a fair juror in this case, unless I got very specific instructions on how to vote. Because in my mind, I could not escape what might be fair in this case versus what might be best for the sport and best for, you know, college football nation writ large moving forward. I don't know if I could separate those two things. And so I might have to say, okay, well, if you're telling me I'm not at all allowed to think about the future and I have to rule just specifically on this case, common sense says to vote no. But when you look at the law, legally speaking, what antitrust is, where this fits into. You really have not played four NCAA football seasons, so that might be different. So it might be how you're told to vote, or what you're allowed to, not what to vote, but what you're allowed to consider before you come up with a ruling. So I'm glad that I don't have to do that. And we'll have more to talk about with that going forward. Obviously that could bust open anytime in the next, 49 minutes. It could bust open.
We'll not wish that upon ourselves here, that we get the ruling in 49 minutes.
But
it has happened.
Started to just consider or lean into the fact that things will happen between 3 and 4, and that we just have to accept that. We have to accept that, as that is part of the deal that comes with this show. Yeah. Is that a lot of, because traditionally you think of like afternoon news dumps as what? 5:30 to 6:30, right? That's,
anywhere between like 3:30 to 6, I'd say is the,
well, anytime
that's when we normally, and especially around 5 o'clock.
I always thought of it almost like 6:30 almost, because like as soon as local news would go off the air, you could dump it then, or at the very end of the workday, the very, very end of the workday. So we tend to think of news dumps as things that come there. But now I've started to think, 3 to 4 now, that's what I'm thinking, is I'm just going into that expecting the worst. And that way, if it's anything better than that, hey, you've had yourself a good day. That's how I think about things. But again, what do we say all the time on this show? I don't tell you what to think. I tell you what I think. And I tell you why I think it, and I tell you facts I know, and then I tell you things I think about those facts. That's what we do here. We do not, will not, ever, ever tell you what to think, because you can think for yourself. That's what I think anyway. I think people can think for themselves. I give people enough respect, Tom, to think that they can think things for themselves, and that they can understand that when I'm telling them what I think, that doesn't mean I'm telling them what to think. Some people still don't get that, but most people, I think, do. Most people, I think, do. By the way, talking about head on a swivel, Lady Vols basketball, they've got a game tonight, and that's the rescheduled game from, obviously with the weather there, the ice storm that came through parts of the South a few weeks ago, that game at Ole Miss that they were supposed to be playing. Now they're playing it tonight, which means that, hey, just a couple days after a really physical game at home against Texas, they got to go play at Ole Miss tonight, and then turn around and play A&M in Knoxville in 2 days. So that's what, 3 games, 5 days. That's a little different. Now, again, you could say that in some ways helps prepare you for the conference tournament, because for NCAA play, people make a big deal about playing every other day for the NCAA tournament. The reality is, unless you play in the first four, you're not playing more than 2 games in 3 days. You're not playing more than 2 games in 6 days. If you get to the first four, you're playing then a couple days later, then if you win a couple days after that. If not, you're playing a game, and then a game 2 days later, and then a game 5 or 6 days later. That's what you're doing if you win. So it's a little – it's different in that the conference tournament, depending on how well you've done in the regular season, what league you play in, that's where you might be playing 3 games in 3 days. You might be playing 5 games in 5 days. It gets a little weird in some conferences. If you don't have a great regular season, but then you go on a heater in the postseason, you might be playing 5 games or so in 5 days. And so the Lady Vols won't be in that position. They'll either be playing, they'll either get one bye or two byes for the SEC tournament. But I think playing 3 games like this in 6 days or whatever it is, I think 3 games in 5 days. I think that's actually something that you could look at it as stinks for now, better for the future. So it's something that I think gives you a chance to work on things later. Speaking of Lady Vols news here in the first block, Lady Vols softball team is now consensus number one. Remember, Tom, yesterday we said that there was nothing consensus about it yet because all the polls had not come out. Now
it's very consensus.
The polls are out. All the votes have been counted. Everything has been double blind certified. That's not a thing.
I would say, I don't think they could double blind a
You double blind certified polls.
That would be a little bit.
That's our new. We've created a new way of doing things here.
Yeah.
And but they are now consensus number one, and I think that. Again, it's impossible to say they haven't earned that. If your vote's on who's done the most this season with what we can see on paper or what we can see on the actual games, no one's done more than Lady Vols have. It's not even close particularly. So that's not surprising. But again, I've said a couple weeks into a season, if you don't want to go by that metric, you don't have to. Now, if it's later in the season, you kind of need to go by what's actually your resume. You know, if it's later in the year, you need to be – You need to be a little more metrically minded with some of your stuff. Then, with the exception of an injury here or there, could change your mind on something. But if early in the season you go, you know, this team haven't played anybody, but I'm not really convinced that they're either that great or that bad. I don't want to move them too much up or down. I'm fine with that. Like in baseball, this, you know, going into this season. Tennessee, which plays at 4 o'clock today. We'll talk about that here in a minute because I'll be exiting right from here and then probably editing this very show from the Lindsey Nelson Stadium press box, is that they were all over the map in preseason polls because they were up to 2 or 3 in some. They were down 14, 15 in some. And the reason for that is you've got a roster that looks really good and you've got a new head coach, guy who's never been a head coach. So people don't know what to make of that. And so even though Tennessee, you know, wiped the floor with Nichols in the grade over the weekend, in the D1 poll only went from 14 to 13, and I don't have a problem with that really, because if your stance going into the season was they're going to have to play people with Elander as the coach before I really make up my mind either way, I'm fine with that. Do I think 13 is a little low for them? I do. Did I think 14 was low for them last week? I do. Would I have them in the top 10? Yes. But I can't sit here and say it's dumb if you don't. I mean, if you want to make a new coach, head coach, prove what a program can do under his watch full time, sure. I have no problem with that. And I don't know why anybody would have a huge problem with that. Now, if you're in that locker room, you're in that clubhouse, and you want to use that as a sign of a disrespect, use it, man. It's free fuel. If you want to use it, go ahead and use it. If you want to feel slighted and do something about it, that's great. Athletes have been doing that probably throughout history. So, sure, but I don't think it's that big of a deal. Early in the season, the games have a way of working themselves out. Or you could be in a situation like Tennessee men's basketball right now where I think Jay Billis came out today and had Tennessee, 15th or 16th in his, you know, power rankings. The metrics say Tennessee's about, 16th, 17th, 18th. And the coaches and AP voters don't have them in the poll this week. So, it's been pretty late in the season now, and people still have opinions all over the map with that team. That one I find a little sillier because I don't think it's disrespectful if they're not in the poll, but I do think it's wrong if they're not in the poll because I think there are not 24 or there are not 25 teams that have outperformed them to this point in the season. Need I remind you, they do have a non-conference neutral floor win over Houston, which was ranked number 2 in the country. Did lose a game last night, but you know, it was ranked right there, number 2. That's one of the best wins of the season, Tennessee winning there or beating neutral floor, true neutral floor, beating Houston, one of the best wins of the year. Some bad losses, too. Syracuse was a bad loss. But other than that, no real bad, ugh, how could that happen losses. So something to think about there. We got a lot more to talk about. We got a couple of fun Rick Barnes shots for you, or some video shots that we're going to be able to play for you here in just a little bit. Him talking about Ethan Berg, him talking about people maybe getting a little bit too rough with Nate Amen. And then we'll end the show today later by talking a two-way baseball star in the making at Tennessee who's making a start on the mound today. And we're going to talk about all that stuff after we take a quick break. Come right back here on 10 at 3. Tom, I think today may have set a new record for fastest or quickest turnaround time from sitting in the chair.
You went from 10 at 2 at the end there, I saw you, to the meeting. then running back right in here.
I mean, it really was like the music was almost playing as the door was
shut. I was about to hit the start button, and I was just going to kick this show off without you. It'll just, be 10-3 with Tom Barclay over here.
I'm Tom Barclay. Here's my one man play.
Here's my one man play. I'm going to talk about it since I don't know much. I'm going to talk about curling.
Yeah. Here's Tom. I got rhythm. Yeah. I got music. Hey, whatever that is.
It's that's Gershwin.
Well, I mean, you'd be performing it.
Yeah.
Respectfully, I might add. Maybe respectfully. I don't know. I mean, respectfully in terms of your desire for it to be good. It may not be good, but then again, art is is subjective. Nothing about art is objective. Nothing about art. Art is completely subjective, completely in the eye of the beholder. And someone, like I was talking, it's my dad's birthday. Mm-hmm. He and I have fought my whole life over Bob Dylan. I think Bob Dylan, one of the greatest American songwriters ever, poet.
Dad, not so much.
And my dad, he doesn't even sing. He talks.
30 seconds.
Oh, I'll do it my dad's voice. I'll do my dad's voice. He ain't even singing. He ain't even singing, Wes. He's just talking.
I mean, he's a folk singer, right? So
that's what I
American
mean.
American folksy.
Yes.
That's his whole shtick, if you will.
But that's an example of art.
True.
Being something.
I like Bob Dylan just fine.
That is subjective. I love Dad not so much.
All right. We'll be back in 5, y'all.
Welcome back to 10-3, Wes Rucker and Tom Barclay coming to you. Live and direct if you're watching it or listening to it live and direct. If you're not, then it's not live and direct. But at the time we said these things, yeah. It was live and direct.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
You just couldn't make time out of your day VOD to get to the to
or
to
listening the, in on the, yeah, the you, podcast network.
Yeah, you chose not to listen to it or watch it live, and that's fine. That's fine.
We all have busy schedules.
Every
you.
Single viewing. And listening experience is one that is appreciated, whether it's live, whether it's later, whether it's a year from now, whenever it is, these things, they stay out there forever for the most part. Whenever you get to them, we appreciate that you did it. We certainly do. Here's speaking of the comically haphazard way in which things had to be put together today. Tom, did you see that there were a couple of videos that I was able to sneak in earlier?
Lucky for you. I did.
Yes.
So those are loaded up in there. To be fair, though, I noticed shortly after we started the show.
Yes. Well, because when I was walking over to like the dressing room, I was like, if Tom's there, I'm going to shout at him that I did that. But you weren't sitting in there at the time. And then I was like, okay, if I take the time to get out my notepad, write a note, put it on the desk and go, I might be late to Robin's show.
You could just write on a
should have just texted it. Should have just texted
Sots
it.
That, or just Barnes, and I would know exactly what you're talking about.
And then
about.
Take it and throw it in the room and go. But no, we do have a couple of interesting things. So we talked about this yesterday, that Tennessee got, at least in the first half especially, got a really nice step-up performance from Ethan Berg the other day. Ethan Berg, who, by the way, and this is, I think, interesting, he had not seen his mom in 7 months when she was able to make the trip, surprise him, fly over from Israel and see the game. So he got a visit from her, and that was a neat thing. And then, hey, he gets his best playing time in a long time, and he goes out there and he puts up 8 points in the first half. It's a couple of big threes. It's a tough layup in transition. And it was good to see because there are times in a season where you start to think that somebody is – if they're out of the rotation, they're not getting back in it because there's not enough time to make that work unless somebody gets hurt. But Rick Barnes, again, old dog, new tricks. He showed the other day, he said, told his guys before the game, he told the staff, hey, Ethan's been practicing better. We got to get him in there. And Greg Polinsky came to him, one of his top assistants, and talked to him about it and said, hey, you're right, like we need to do this. And so they gave Ethan Berg some run. Now, that meant that, you know, talented freshman guard Amari Evans didn't play at all in the second half. And again, you got to give to get. If somebody's playing, somebody else maybe ain't. And then Amari Abram is somebody who has been sick for the past week or so. His playing time had been decreasing anyway, but Rick Barnes said, Mo Abram's going to be back at some point, and he's going to be in the mix because they like him a lot. So that was good to see. We'll see what that means going forward. They host Oklahoma tomorrow. You know, hey, we don't know, but we do know now that it's interesting enough that Ethan Berg could really be stepping up because he was supposed to be in the rotation all year. He was supposed to maybe be the primary backup point guard to Jacoby Gillespie. And he started early in the season doing a couple good things. But he wasn't a great defender, was a little loose with the ball. So despite being a really good shooter, the cons were outweighing the pros. And so somebody had to go. The rotation had to be trimmed. He and, at times, Amari Abram are the guys who got trimmed. But he came back, and maybe he's here to stay. Maybe he's not. We'll find out pretty soon, I guess. But here after the game on Saturday is Tennessee coach Rick Barnes speaking about sophomore guard Ethan Berg.
Ethan told a story when you were watching film yesterday about you telling them a story about the game where TJ Ford got in foul trouble and someone stepped up off the bench. Who was that player for Texas? And
now you're testing me right now. Yeah. Who was it? It's a true story. We were playing Michigan State. It was a long time ago. Now you're making me see how old I am. But and my whole point to that story was that you got to be ready from here to the end of the year. It might be one game. It might be the last game. You know, you've got to be ready. And Ethan, what's helped him? You know, we moved him to the scout team along with some other players just to try to get him to calm down, to slow down, because he's always been competitive. He was trying to do way too much. And all I asked him to do when he went to the scout team, just show me you can play without turning the ball over. That's all I want to see. Just don't turn the ball over. Be fundamentally sound. And you know what? He embraced it, and he hasn't. I mean, we always at the end of practice normally go against each other for a little bit where he does get those reps. And I said, the other thing, you need to get in shape. You're not getting enough reps the way you're going right now. You need to get in shape, and he's done that. So that's, to me, he's a where he really showed his maturity. And I asked him last night, I said, why do you think you haven't played? And he said, Coach, honestly, because I wanted to do it my way. And I realized my way's not going to work, and that's maturity on his part. But Greg Polinsky came up to me before practice, and we've been before the game today, and we said, you know, we're going to give him a chance because he's done everything we've asked him to do. I think it's a great lesson for our younger guys too, because some of those guys over the last couple games have gone in and maybe gotten a little bit out of their role. And but Ethan was huge tonight. You know, he really was. He only had one bad turnover, but at least he was trying to get it where we wanted to get it. And but I think it's a great lesson for all of them because we're going to need them all at some point. I don't care if it's for one, two, three, four possessions. We're going to need them.
That was Tennessee coach Rick Barnes. And he did, by the way, he did eventually name that player. He remembered. It was funny because I asked him a question about – this is classic Barnes. I asked him a question about 10 minutes later, and if I had more time, I would have put that side into this one and put those things together. But he, in the middle of an answer to me about 10 minutes later, said, by the way, I remember that name now. Then he remembered who it was and said, "See, not so old after all." Basically, so he was able to go back and name that player. But I think that is and this is the question that I asked Rick later, and he gave what I think was a really, really good answer. And maybe we'll even play tomorrow. But it's that he thinks some of the best teams are the teams that improve the most throughout a season. He said the key component to that in a lot of ways, other than the obvious things, health and all these things, is there are usually a few guys, two, three, or four guys on a team who maybe don't play quite as much as they should. And that might be because they're young and haven't proved it to the coaches yet. It may be because there's just too many players that are good at that position. It may be something structurally within a team's X's and O's that just make it difficult. You know, there can be any number of reasons why. It could be a player who is really talented but got hurt early in the year and then the team started winning games, and you don't want to mess with something when you're winning, right? So there's a lot of reasons why this could happen, but there's usually on most teams 2 to 3 to 4 guys who feel like they should be playing more. Everybody thinks they should play more, but there's 2, 3, or 4 guys who maybe have a stronger point than others do. guys who, like your best few players who aren't quite in the rotation or they're at the very end of the rotation. He said if those guys, their attitude determines how much a team improves. Because if they are guys who can torpedo a locker room, they are also guys who can make sure that the atmosphere within a locker room is very good. And if they go out there consistently every day, don't complain, or even if they complain, they still go out there and work hard and they push the guys in front of them every day in practice like maniacs, those are the teams, in Barnes' estimation, that get a lot better from the beginning to the end of the year. And I think that's the reason why I think there's probably a lot of truth in that is, first off, it makes sense. And secondly, when I put that quote out there on social media, a whole lot of basketball coaches from like the NBA down to the high school level, all a bunch of them liked that post that I put up there. So they were all reading it and clearly passing it to each other. So they were like, yes, 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 the professor's making a good point here. And I think that's good to see when Ethan Berg says something like, I expected to play more. I thought coming here, listen, I'm a little older guy. I've played in Israel at, you know, as it's not the biggest league, but played against pros there. And I expected to come here and play. And when I didn't at first, I didn't understand why. And I was upset about it. And then he said, the more I thought about it, it's because I'm not doing what they want me to do or what they need me to do. And so he made a concerted effort to not do everything his way, to do it the way the coaches wanted, to listen to them, to accept the coaching, humble himself a little bit. And then he comes back and he's being, at least in this short window, closer to the player they thought they had. And he said, this is really interesting, that he thought a lot of these losses Tennessee's had, you know, we've said this before, Jakobi Gillespie's had to play a lot of minutes. And he says he's not tired at the end of games. He says that's not why he's made some mistakes at the end of games. He says that's got nothing to do with it. But regardless, they've lost some games, and in some of those games, he's had a couple of really unfortunate plays in the final minutes. And Ethan Berg said he takes some of those losses on himself because he was supposed to be a guy letting Jakobi Gillespie rest. He was supposed to be the guy out there letting Jakobi Gillespie play 30 minutes a game, not 38 or 37, and that could be helping the team and that he's hurting the team by not doing that. So I thought that was a really mature way to put things. So we'll see. He's got another game tomorrow to go out there. And I imagine after the way he played in the last game, he'll get some run in the first half of that game against Oklahoma. And how that goes probably will determine if he plays in the second half. That's kind of how that goes, right? So he hasn't proven enough for long enough to get a really long rope on some of this stuff, but he'll get a chance. Barnes also had an interesting thing that I want to get to because I want to talk about some more baseball stuff here in the final segment. So I want to get to this too. This was something that if you've been watching games, you've noticed Rick Barnes running hot and cold on this, how much Nate Ament's being dealt with physically and how the calls he is or is not getting. And Rick Barnes sometimes not mad about it, sometimes hot, steamy, hickory Rick Barnes, white hot mad, like hickory Rick, right? I call that a good old like redneck mad. Like he is a good redneck mad about this stuff sometimes, right? Hillbilly mad. And he offered, I think, a pretty nuanced take on this and why he feels that way. Here's Rick Barnes talking about the physical way in which Nate Ament is handled.
Last one for Brent. Rick, I don't want to get you in trouble here, but I know you haven't been terribly happy with the whistle that Nate gets. What does he got to do to get the right whistle in your eyes, or is it possible?
All I can tell you, and again, it's a matter of I can just tell you, I was on the rules committee, and I always said a foul's a foul. And I think if you get any kind of contact on the three-point line, why is that not the same call at 12, 15 feet? I understand closer, and I believe this. When you're out there by the three-point line, fans react because they can see it. A lot of fans can't see what's going on inside. But, you know, I could guard some guys if you allow me to walk under them. I could. And, again, back in the day, we taught that. And, you know, they're going to say guys go straight up. Well, they're straight up here, but the bottom is where you got to referee from the ground up. And I think that's where calls like that are me. And I think it's a hard game to referee. And again, I've said it before, Mike Eads and his officials in this league, there is no question that we're the toughest league in the country to referee because of the quality of players, because of the physicality, skill level, and it's a hard game. And my biggest thing about officiating is that everybody, TV wants it under 2 hours. And if that's what you're going to go by, I see why some fouls aren't called. If we're going to say we got to get the games done in 2 hours, I don't care. We have to stay out there 2.5, whatever, to get the game right. Let's get it right. But again, you go back and look. And again, I still believe in freedom of movement. I do. And I don't think that is called at all. And I think it should be because you can – and understand this. We do the same thing. We do the same thing, and I would guard Nate the same way. There is no doubt if I were playing against Nate because, you know, I'll tell you this. When I was at Clemson and Coach Smith and I got into it, it was because we played a very physical style of basketball, and he had terrific players, and I know what he was thinking. I don't want my guys to get hurt, and I can assure you that when I went to Texas and got LaMarcus Aldridge, Kevin Durant, and those guys, I saw his point of view real clear. I saw it, and that's so I get it, but it hadn't changed very much, you know. But I get it, and I think it's a hard game to officiate. But when you got a guy that you're playing through a lot, and Nate's worked hard, I think he should get a better whistle.
Thanks, Coach.
All right, so I took care of everybody there, just so you know.
That was Tennessee Coach Rick Barnes talking about the physicality that happens there with Nate Ament and how he thinks some of the contact on mid-range jumpers should be called the same way that it is from the three-point line, and that he understands the reasons why a call may or may not be made. He understands the external factors that could be weighing on officials in these situations. And I've always said this about Barnes. He's usually pretty good about, in a game, only losing his mind when he sees something that he just really, really doesn't like. He'll let a lot of things go, and he'll say, it's a judgment call. We didn't get it. Move on. And it's – some people don't like that. I kind of do, and I think officials kind of like it too. Actually, I think they tend to treat that with class. I think class given is oftentimes class received the other way. But there – like in the first half of that LSU game, there are times where he wasn't saying much. But as that game progressed and there were a couple calls made on one end and he thought that Ament was getting roughed up on the other end and not getting some of the calls, he started to lose it a little bit. And I think when I watch this, I think Nate Ament is a difficult player to officiate because sometimes, like Jalen Carey, a guy is difficult to officiate because he is so much stronger than other guys. And sometimes he might do something that if a player who wasn't as strong did it, you wouldn't go flying 10 feet in the air. But you do it with him because he's huge and strong and compact and powerful. And I think Nate Ament's interesting because he's got a unique skill set there at 6'11", can you know, has guard skills, unique for the college game anyway, can dribble, penetrate, pull up from mid-range, can lean into you, and he's all arms and legs. So there's a lot of him to foul. There's a lot of arm extension. There's a lot of leg extension. And he's not, you know, a 250-pound kid. There's just there's when he gets fouled, he is going to move because he's thin. And he's also got a lot of arms that are getting in your face. He's not a really simple player. And I still think there are times where he gets a call that maybe didn't have to be called. But I also think there are times where he very clearly is fouled and it's not called because, you know, people don't want him to go to the free throw line 25 times a game. And he's not James Harden, you know, he's not James Harden out there drawing this stuff on purpose. He's not falling over. These are legit things that are happening. But I think he's a pretty honest player in that way. But he's a difficult player to officiate. And I think going down the season, down the stretch, he's obviously going to be someone Tennessee is leaning more and more. And if you notice, he's a freshman who's now being introduced last in the starting lineup. And if you don't think that's a slight little nudge in that direction, he's the guy. He's the guy. They're saying, you're a freshman, but you are the guy. Go be the guy, and we'll have your back. And having his back means that, you know, when he gets fouled hard, look what Jalen Carey does. he puts one on whoever puts one on Nate Amen. He doesn't let people rough up Nate Amen. But Rick Barnes would like to see him get to the foul line more, and we'll see if that happens because he gets to there a fair amount. But there's a lot of games where I think he could be getting there more, and that's not getting called. And you think if you're gonna give star players some calls, that's a pretty big star player. So we'll see how that gets reffed down the stretch, because I think that will be a big component in how well this goes or does not go for Tennessee here in the next month or so. A lot more to discuss here. We're going to switch gears a little bit, talk a little bit of Tennessee baseball. The lineup is out for today's game. We'll talk about that here in just a minute because it's starting basically as soon as this show ends. So I better be in a hurry to get over there. So we're going to step out of here. We're going to take a quick break and come back for one final segment here on 10 and 3. Tom, when you get a chance, can you pull up the Tennessee baseball Twitter account to pull up to display today's lineup?
Sure thing. Let me
thank
that
you.
Here.
Thank you. Sure we'll go over it here in just a minute. I don't think there's any. I don't see any big. Maybe one little interesting wrinkle there today.
Okay.
Not just the fact that the starting pitcher is hitting for himself, which is awesome, but there's one other little position change there that I think's pretty interesting. So we'll get that one in there. We'll discuss it here in just a minute. I think that Amen thing is fascinating because I do think there are times where he very clearly is fouled and it's not called, because I think officials are thinking he's just so skinny. How are you not going to do anything to him there? And guys who are like him, I think people are getting themselves in the mindset now of understanding that players like Jalen Carey are tough to officiate. Just like for years in the NBA, on a much larger level, obviously Shaq was so hard to officiate because he's just bigger than everybody.
Yeah.
And Jalen Carey's just so compact and powerful in the post.
About a minute left.
That I think people understand the way he plays, when he chest to chest somebody, they go flying. And that sometimes it's a foul, sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's a defensive foul, even though it looks like a charge.
Mm-hmm.
Just because, hey, it's not his fault that he's stronger than you. But there are calls that go either way in that because it's just hard. But on the flip side of that, players like Nate Amen are hard to officiate.
30 seconds.
Too. Because of they're just all arms and legs, and you know they're skinny, but they're able to drive the ball into the paint and pull up and shoot, and you know they got all these arms and legs coming at you, and you're gonna hit some of them, and it's sometimes it's a foul, sometimes it's not, but it's hard to tell.
Yeah. All right, stand by. We are 5 seconds away.
Welcome back to 10 at 3. Wes Rucker coming here to you alongside Tom Barclay here on a Tuesday, February the 17th, 2026, here from WBIR HQ, where I'll be for another 17 minutes, probably in 10 seconds, before I pack on up and get on over to Lindsey Nelson.
That quick, huh?
Yeah, the game starts at 4.
Oh, yeah.
So yeah, the midweek games.
You got about 5 minutes to drive down to Lindsey Nelson. You think you can do it?
No, there's no chance. I'll be there by the second inning, hopefully. Especially parking, yeah. Gosh knows
what that'll take. Speed, please.
On campus. No, but I'm saying just parking on campus. It's a big old box of chocolates there.
That and too, yeah.
It's a box of chocolates that tastes bad. Like you don't.
I have strong feelings about parking anywhere around downtown, but particularly on campus.
I say it's a box of chocolates, but it's like a box of chocolates that all of them are bad, mm-hmm. and just some of them aren't as bad as others. You know, like some of them have like. You know, some of them might just have like a little bit of sand in there. Some of them might have like shards of glass. No matter what, you're not gonna like
it. I'll keep quiet on this. Actually,
yeah, it's no. Oh, don't worry. No, my wife works there, and ask her about holiday parties. When I sit there, I'm like, are any of those parking devils here? Because I am gonna have a word with them. She's like, please don't.
Yeah, we could speak.
She's
for
like,
hours
please don't
about the parking
situation.
She's like,
situation, please don't, especially
particularly recently in the past few years, how things have evolved or there for game day.
She's like, this party. This party has an open bar. Wes mm-hmm. is not allowed to go anywhere near the parking people. That will not be pleasant. She knows. She knows who she married. Let's be honest about this. She knows. I can't not say things to people. I don't know if that's a journalist in me or just the way I was raised. I just can't look at some. I just have a hard time not being like, you know what? here's what I think. Mm-hmm. And you know what? The consequences are what they are. Here's what I think. But we'll see when we can get over there. But it's interesting because Tennessee, and as a quick look ahead to this weekend, Kent State, which doesn't look like a big game, big series on the schedule, Kent State only lost to LSU 10-7 yesterday. So put a scare into the Bayou Bengals, and then Kent State also had a sweep over the weekend on opening weekend. So maybe a little better looking game or series than we thought it may have been. So keep your eyes peeled for that. But and you never know with midweek baseball, it goes both ways. I say this all the
baseball
time.
College
baseball, yeah. Every team takes a couple of dumb midweek losses. Everybody has one usually. And most people have two. Unless you lose like three or so of them, that's the only time you really should ever start to be concerned, because you're trying different things and different pitchers and you're saving your guys for the weekends. Not that you excuse losses, but it's baseball. They do happen.
Yeah.
But my point was originally that these midweek games, as it gets a little warmer, start at 6. Early in the year, though, they start at 4. Today's maybe could have started at 6 because it's a beautiful day out there today.
Perfect out there.
It's the 62 or whatever, 65, yeah. Something like that today was.
Very nice.
I think I may have heard 67 was the high temperature today.
Yeah, feels like early April.
Lovely. Give me a bunch of these and let me play golf every day. I'd be so happy if I could do that. But here is the lineup for Tennessee today against UNC Asheville, a game that I think Tennessee probably should take care of it pretty comfortably, but you never know. No surprises there at the top. Henry Ford batting leadoff, playing third base. Blaine Brown there, the starting pitcher, batting for himself. I just posted the Michael Scott crying gif, just so proud crying. Ohtani is bringing back these, it's okay to have more of these two-way guys again. And yes, 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 please. I still believe baseball players should hit for themselves or should have to not come back in the game. I am an old school National League purist on this. I am an old man waving at clouds angrily.
Waving?
I'm shouting at them. I'm waving fists.
The shaking a fist at
them. There you go, shaking fists, not waving. Hi, how are you up there? Hey, look, it's an airplane. Like my kid is. But no, it's – and I realize that I've lost this fight. I have lost the DH fight because and I understand baseball is doing everything it can to get people to keep watching, and high scoring games tend to get a little more interest from the average fan. And we live in this era where their attention spans are 2 seconds because kids are raised on their phones. And I get it. I've lost this fight, but my opinion is not changing. I think baseball is a sport where 9 people hit for themselves or they leave the game. Because I also used to love the fact that that took a spot that really you didn't think about that often, but if you had a pitcher who could hit just a little bit, that was such an advantage. And that impacted the way some games would swing on this, right? And then you had to be like, okay, are you hitting for him here? Are you going to let him hit for himself? What do you do? It's a tough call. And there's actually a safety argument that goes against me here, that it's actually better if you just manage pitchers as their own thing, because that way you're only looking at their arm health. You're only looking at – you're not maybe having to pinch hit for a starting pitcher in the fourth inning because the bases are loaded, or fifth inning because the bases are loaded. And then you're having to tax a bullpen more than it should, so you're using guys more than you should, so you get more arm injuries, because these days everybody throws 95-plus and everybody has at least one Tommy John. I get it. But I still think baseball is a game where 9 people hit for themselves. That is my oldest man opinion, I think. I try to be a modern man, and in so many ways I think I am. I am archaic when it comes to that. I have a line in the sand. And I drew that line in the sand. And then the National League, which had my back for most of my life, stabbed me right in the back. And it allowed the DHs. It is what it is. But I still get excited when I see a pitcher hitting. And Blaine Brown is not just a regular hitter. This is a guy who will maybe be one of the top 10 picks in the draft next year. By next year, I mean the 27 draft. Because Henry Ford, who's leading off, could be top 10 pick this year. But the only real interesting twist there is that I see anyways is that Tyler Myatt, the Walter State transfer, is playing second base today. This will be his first game starting in the field. He's been a DH before, but Tennessee's got some guys who can play a little bit in the infield, play in the outfield. They're trying to figure out who their best nine are or best eight are, and that's going to lead to some, you know, a little bit of shuffling here and there. Like Henry Ford's playing third. Reese Chapman's playing right. When Garrett Wright comes back, he and Stone Lawless are catching. I think Jay Abernathy's playing center field all year. Those are guys who I think every day, Levi Clark, first base. These are guys every day you are going to see them hitting and probably playing in the same position. There's other ones, though, that, hey, it could be the hot hand. It could be a matchup. It could be a lot of different things there. That's about half the lineup that's still very much not set. I would say maybe slightly more than half the lineup, still not set. So I think that's – and it's really important for Stone Lawless to get off to a hot start too, because when Garrett Wright comes back, he's a very good player. He's also a very fun, unique player because he's a catcher slash center fielder. You do not see a lot of that. You do not see a lot of guys who are you see catcher first base, catcher third base, you know, Craig Biggio, catcher second base. Like you've seen, but like catcher center field, that Venn diagram is minuscule. That's like they might, like you would have to pan out pretty far to see where they overlap. Like that's he's a unique player, and you don't see a lot of guys who can do that, and that's fun that he can do that. But I think you're going to see Jay Abernathy in center field quite a bit because I really, really like him as a player. And I think Antigua at shortstop, people probably ask him what's going on with Manny Marin. I'll ask, obviously, Elander about that after the game. I know Marin has been dealing with a hand injury, and it's not like they're super worried about it, but it's something that early in the season you just want to get taken care of because Manny Marin is such a really, really good baseball player and a guy who's going to be in the middle infield for Tennessee all season long. So he's a guy who's got a big future in this game, I think, and a guy who Tennessee's going to want him down the stretch. They're going to want him healthy, you know, April, May, June. So if he's dealing with a bit of a nagging hand injury now, just be safe. They're doing that with Garrett Wright, too. They're doing that with the pitcher Arvidsson, too. And that's one thing that Tony Vitello did, too. He has – this is something Elander believes in as well. They don't want to baby guys, but early in the year, he's like, early in the year, if you got anything bothering me, you need to come to my office and you need to tell me. And you need to tell trainer Jeff Wood, I need to know if anything in your body does not feel right for the first half of the season, I need to know. He's like, now late in the year, if it's just a little bit of something bothering you, you know, you might be playing anyway. So, you know, it gets down to later in the year, like, hey, unless it's something that's really, really bad or could get worse, this is championship season. Early in the year, anything's bothering you, come tell me. You won't play that day. Get you iced up, get you rested. We'll get you good to go when you need to be there. So this is the time of the season when if anything's bothering you, especially if you're a pitcher, and anything in your elbow, anything in your shoulder, anything in your hand, anything does not feel right, anything in your side, anything doesn't feel right. If you've got a nail that's bothering you as a pitcher early in the season, go talk about it. Go talk about it. Get it fixed. You got a blister? Get that thing fixed. Don't. And people laugh all the time. How does a blister keep you out? You go try to throw a baseball with a blister on your hand, and you try to throw it accurately at 95-plus miles an hour with a blister on your finger. It ain't going to happen. So, and that's a danger, not just to you, but that's a danger to the hitters as well. So, we'll see. I'm going to head over there right now, actually. I'm going to go ahead and pack up and get going, and we'll be back here tomorrow with, who knows, as the Aguilar turns, that could happen then. We'll have baseball to discuss. We'll have a Lady Vols game to discuss. We'll have a men's basketball game to preview. We'll have more softball to talk for the number one Lady Vols there. Nelly and them are number one. There's a lot to talk about, and we'll do it when we come back in about 23 hours. So we'll see you in 23 hours.